have to figure to wake up to Toucher and Rich. Just tell your smart speaker to play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub, no!
It's the Bankroll Boys.
Did that count?
Yep.
With Joey Bag of Money.
And the Onion.
Okay. Get help today.
And Fist of Cash in the chat.
Oh! 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Who doesn't love the Bankroll Boys? Joe Murray, Dan Lifshatz.
Can I just say that last week was the first week that I didn't feel confident placing a bet because the recommendation was to take Arizona on Thursday Night Football. How much did Arizona lose by?
It wasn't great.
I don't want to talk about that.
I have to say,
swing and miss.
Not great. Swing
and miss. I mean, this was like a miss the size of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
But that happens sometimes. But I will say that was the only week I have not put money on any of the games because I just didn't feel it. I didn't feel it. But we're going to get that karma back. That was an all-time swing and miss, was it not, Dan?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
It was quite bad, but
the sharps were on it, though. A lot of the sharps were on it, and they were trying to get money on both sides, and, you know, eventually that was just a bad loss for Dan.
I'm sorry, what are the sharps again?
Anti-squares. Last night in the basketball game,
yeah,
Oklahoma versus the Celtics. Celtics were -1. On national television, public square play, Celtics -1. Mm-hmm. I see Dan post, take the Thunder tonight, not happening. Other respected people. So everybody and their mother was on the Thunder who were sharps.
Wrong.
Me on the square, take the Celtics. Somehow they pulled it out. But that's right. what we mean by a square play, okay, and a sharp play. That Arizona play at least was a sharp play.
Yeah. It's the sharps
stupid
versus the squares.
Yeah.
Right.
Sharks and Jets. Same thing.
Well, I was thinking more of the Socs versus the Greasers.
I'm sorry.
So I was thinking about.
All right.
I mean, you got these squares running around making these dumb bets. Listen, I lost 100 grand, but at least it was a sharp bet.
Well, you've got. Okay, so I'm looking at these World Series odds that you have brought in, and they're pretty interesting. Let's start with the exact World Series results odds. Right now, the best odds are that the Red Sox win it 4-2. And can you go? So they believe that the Dodgers will be able to at least pull two more of these out.
Yeah, this is at the beginning of the series here. I have the Sox in 6 for a +325. So $100 gets you $325. The more and more I watch this, I think it's a gentleman's sweep. I think Sox win 4-1. This thing's over with. Now, I did place a bet last. I had two hedges. One, I had the Red Sox to win the pennant. Two different bets. One, I got on July 1st at +650.
Wow.
So when I was on the show last week, I thought Houston would come back and win the series. So I hedged it. And again, I came away with 10 units, I guess, is the appropriate term. But you hedged it. I could have won 14 instead. I won 10, but at least I would have won money either way if Houston came back.
Not to change subject, but do you guys do the lotto?
No.
Okay, so
that's a square play, like $20 on the Mega Millions.
Okay,
like
it's all sports gambling. You don't do any of the lotto stuff.
I mean, I like the tables, but
okay, that's right. That's your
the tables is fun.
Oh yeah,
blackjack. Yeah,
is there gonna be a special one? Is it gonna be like when you walk into the Encore Casino?
This station should have a studio at the Encore. And we should be broadcasting the Kentucky Derby, all these big events. And we'll be there every week.
I'd have no problem at all with that. We could be our own Musburgers.
That's right.
Isn't that where he does his thing?
Exactly.
He's like a weird booth.
I'm not joking. Like, we should have a studio there like we do at the Garden. And we should be there for every big event.
How
high would you get at the Encore?
Well, we'll see. I mean, how high up can we get? I'm going to the Bahamas in a couple of weeks, so I'm interested to see what kind of
someone sold me a bag of tree clippings in the Bahamas.
Yeah, you can
at least look at it. Come on, you got to at least look at it. Wouldn't you be like, I'm not paying for this?
No. It was a dark bar, and I was a young man, and I was robbed of my $20.
That's not going to happen to me.
No. I don't know anyone who's ever bought good weed down there. They always have a story of like getting bad weed when they go to the Bahamas.
I mean, who would you ask? You know,
like the people who work at the hotel.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You got to grease them right when you get in.
Joe knows what's good.
So you've got the odds to win the World Series MVP. I'm kind of surprised at who has the best odds right now.
No, this is from before.
Yeah, this is
so this is
start.
Pre.
Oh, this is pre. This isn't now. Okay,
so, I don't think that a lot of people have Kershaw going right now.
I have taken bets at the beginning of the series for Steve Pierce to win. I don't think that's going to happen. But right now, I mean, who would be the MVP in your opinion?
I mean, Price.
Price or Kelly?
Yeah, I mean,
I think Ben Attendee's been pretty good.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I he had the four hits in game one.
If they sweep, it's not going to be Price.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we'd have to go. He'd have to probably pitch again. But, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say Benintendi. Sure. Yeah, he would be up there. Where's his odds?
Plus 1,700.
All right, that's not bad. And that's from the beginning of the series?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see if you can pull up some of the updated ones.
Yeah, like and right now, if you like the Sox to continue to win, minus 600 right now. And I believe it was somewhere about 550 for the Dodgers to come back and win.
All right, so the Patriots are currently the second biggest road favorites in the history of Monday Night Football. You said the 07 Patriots owned the top spot when they were favored by 19 in Baltimore, and they only won that game by 3. What are you thinking about this weekend's, or actually Monday night's game? You stay away from that with a spread that big?
I mean, it's just it's a gross game. I mean, you probably have to lean the Patriots there, but it's such a big number that, you know, there's so many ways to just get backdoored on that. I don't want to touch it. It's going to get up to 15 probably because a whole bunch of sites probably won't want to have teaser action. So if you reduce it by 7 and you have the Pats like minus 7 in a teaser, they probably will bump it up to 15. So that's Pats minus 8 because, you know, 7 is one of those prime NFL numbers. So, I mean, I don't want to lay that. I don't want to touch it. I think that's just a gross number to lay. The over-under is 44, though, which is really interesting because that's telling you that they don't think that Buffalo is going to score anything.
Yeah, I'll leave the over on that one. Pat's defense has been terrible. And they'll at least give up a couple of points in this one. They'll probably score 37. I believe last year's matchup was, 37-16. So I lean the over. 44, that's a low number.
Okay. All right. When you look at the college playoffs, you guys have that. I know that you're both fans of betting the college game. Who do you like in the college playoffs?
So I think right now it's Alabama or nothing. Alabama LSU is playing this week. I don't know what the line is yet, Dan, on that one. That's going to be is this Alabama team for real against a really good LSU team who's only beaten, what, teams that are 500 or better?
LSU has been incredible this year. I think that's next week. But either way, I mean, Alabama by far away, they're just blowing doors. They're beating everyone. I think they were up 28-0 in the first quarter versus Tennessee last week. It's disgusting. They're killing everyone. It's not even close. They're 8-0 against the spread in the first half this year. I think they're 7-1 against the spread in the first quarter. They just got such big leads. They also haven't played anyone besides Tennessee, who had a nice win, you know, this year. But other than that, they haven't played anyone. So that is going to be very interesting. And apparently, a couple people I talked to said they might be laying 16.5 in the first half.
Jeez.
Just in the first half in LSU.
I think the big thing with the college playoff is who's going to be that third and fourth team. Like, I think Notre Dame, if they went out, are a lock. But who's going to be that fourth team? Like, if LSU can somehow knock off Alabama, which I don't think will happen, they're going to kick around there. People are all of a sudden on the Michigan train. Yeah. I'm not. No. And then Oklahoma still is one of the best teams. So I'm trying to find a bet, but I want to take Central Florida to be that fourth team. To go undefeated for a second year in a row and be the fourth team. If I can find the bet, I will. Bert's shaking his head no. But if they win out, how can they not be considered?
Because Ohio State with one loss will be.
Yeah, but Ohio State has not proven anything this year.
They never do, and they're always there.
No, but if they beat Michigan.
Joe, I could name a half dozen teams that will get in with one loss over Central Florida. But and I'm not just saying Ohio State. There are like at least a half dozen teams where if they get there with one loss, they'll absolutely make it over an undefeated Central Florida.
It's called a value bet, though. Like, see, that's a team that if they went out, I think they deserve a shot. I'm trying to find. There's none yet.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure about that this year, Bert, because after everything that happened last year, I don't think that's going to be the case.
What's their toughest opponent?
I mean, they haven't played anyone.
Cincinnati, and they'll play. They already beat Memphis. I know they won by one, but yeah.
You have to have. Like, I think if you're one of those teams, you absolutely have to have at least one major conference victory. It doesn't need to be over Alabama or LSU, but it needs to be someone decent from a. But Cincinnati's not a major conference team. Yeah. I'm saying you need to have a power five. You need to have like a power five win.
All Joe, right. Joe, Steve, hang on. Steve is not a fan of the Bankroll Boys.
Hi, Steve.
Steve, yeah, how's it going, guys?
Hey.
Yeah, every time I tune in, you guys, it seems like you don't know what the heck you guys are talking about. That.
Yeah, want to give us an example?
Like, you know, yeah,
tough guy. give us an example. You got to call bust my balls. Give me an answer.
Where can I find you guys' track record? I looked online. I can't even find you guys.
Go on Twitter, at @overunder985. We actually give plays. Other touts go out and give plays and actually, like, try to get people to pay for it. We're sitting here trying to give a service. our own Rich certainly bets $380 mm-hmm. of a bankroll.
It's true.
From being with us every single week. So
we're not going to sit here
and pump our chest, but we like to gamble, and I think we know exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, here's the thing. How about this? We're 61% in the NFL this year, and we're 57% in college football. So unless you get a better record than that,
it's like the worst thing. Like these UFC, you don't know what you're talking about with UFC. It's like, you know, hockey guys, like, I played hockey, like, I know the game. Like, these guys aren't even betting. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, give me an example, man. Yeah.
I'm laying $10 on the Pats this week. They're going to cover easy.
That's true. MMA fans are like, that's true. That's true. Exclusionary. You know, like, no, you're not part of the club. Get out of here.
They're like an indie band fan. Like, they don't want their sport to get, they don't want it to get big. Yeah.
That's right. You don't get it.
There's a bunch of square plays. John, go ahead.
Hey guys, what's up? Screw that last guy. I like your podcast. I like hearing you guys on the Bit and Toucher and Rich. So don't listen to that guy, first of all.
Okay.
Well, thanks. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
No problem. But so I had two quick questions. I actually lost some money on the Cardinals last week.
Apologies.
And in the past, I know. But I felt the same way as you. I usually ride them at home. I like them out in the desert. So my question to you, two-part question. One, when do you get to the point where you get spooked enough on a team? Well, you don't want to go back to them where you get to decide they don't have it this year. I'm not going to go with my old tendencies and my old system. And my second question, I got a pretty good line. I think it's on Bodog over here. The over-under on the amount of times Sarge has had sex without paying for it. I want to see 0.5. What do you got for that?
Uh-huh. Fellas, your thoughts.
Again, I will take the over on Sarge.
Joe Murray loves Sarge.
No, listen, I've been friends with Sarge.
So you say Sarge slays with a lady.
No, I have been friends with Mike Riley for over 10 years.
Okay.
I can tell you, I at least know 5 women he's been with.
Okay.
Wow.
I at least know 5 of them.
There it is.
I mean, listen, like, the guy, he's a nice guy. Women like him.
And he's a relationship guy, too. He's not like he gets in long-term relationships.
No hit and run?
He's not his thing.
No one's bad-mouthing.
The team I'd stay away from right now is Jacksonville. And Dan walked in the room, kind of like Jacksonville this week. I'm like, I'm out on Jacksonville.
That's got a potential to blow up.
Yeah, but so is Philly because they are terrible. They just blew a 17-point lead. That team,
Wentz doesn't look good.
He doesn't look good. He won't run the ball. And that team is, I'm telling you, one loss away from being, you know, a border. If Washington wins this week and Philly loses, it's going to start to be a runaway in that division.
It's going to be chaos in the Jacksonville locker room if they lose on Sunday.
By the way, so is a caller coming at the Bankroll Boys? Don't bring a water pistol into the Lions' den.
These Twitter tough guys, like, you know, we're sitting here, we're here every week, we're just guys who like to gamble and talk about it.
All right, so where am I putting my money? Is it the over on the Patriots game?
No, I'm out on the Giants. I like Washington. I think Washington's going to win.
Who are you
that
following
this
week, Rich?
What's that?
Because you didn't follow Dan, and Dan failed spectacularly. So
should I go with Joe?
Now, listen, this might be a square play,
yes,
but Washington is a pick'em on the road at the Giants. I think the Giants suck. Like, they're really bad. They're about to blow it up. Washington's been outstanding. They're going on the road. I like Washington as a square play this week at a pick'em. They just need
to
win.
That's not bad. A pick'em?
Joe, put my $380 on that.
Boom!
All
right.
Whoa! There we go!
All right. Well, there you go. It's square play. Rich making the square play. Not as sharp this week.
Is that fading the public? I've completely missed
that. Yeah, you got to fade the public.
I don't know what that means.
I mean,
you are riding with them this week.
You're riding with the public.
All right,
you're not fading the public.
Okay, very nice.
The Over Under Podcast, Joe Murray, Dan Lifshad.
Dropping today.
They're dropping a new one today. So on your way home from work, get that going and make yourself a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
We know Sarge has been with at least 5 women in 10 years.
That I know of.
All right.
You heard it here first.
Bert Breer is in studio. We'll talk to him in just a moment.
That was nice. 2-0. Can't beat that. I was thinking about hopefully maybe going to a game, but I don't know if I'll get that opportunity. So hopefully they win it.
Did you hear that?
I did.
He's back.
How about them Sox guy is back? He said he did it with Devin McCourty this time.
Hey, Coach, how about those Sox?
The very first question, as a matter of fact. Then he says, hey, Devin.
How about them Red Sox?
Jesus. Who's paying him?
Byron Barnett, ladies and gentlemen.
Who is that?
That's Byron Barnett.
Is that the Bulldog?
From Channel 7, I believe.
So that's the guy who Channel 7 will send down whenever there's something serious to talk about to ask Bill the questions.
Well, it sounds like there's something serious to talk about, and that
this
would
time
be,
it's the Red Sox. You know, sometimes it's...
Coach, how about those Sox?
Yeah, you know.
It's not easy being green. Hey, Coach, how about those Sox?
How about them, jackass?
So, Bert, how about them Sox?
Now that I got to tell you this. First, let me tell you this. Friday Mornings with Bert Breer is brought to you by Salvador Auto Group. It's tailgating season, and Salvador has incredible deals on Chevy, Ram, and pre-owned trucks just off Route 2 in Gardner and at salvadortrucks.com. Salvador's got your truck.
All right, so there was some rumors of flying about a certain member of the Arizona Cardinals possibly being discussed with Patrick Peterson right. and the Patriots, tied to rumors. Tommy Curran said that people in the Patriots are saying we've never had one conversation at all. Apparently, Patrick Peterson's cousin, who I think works for CBS, I believe, or some network, was saying that it was possible. And that
Brian McFadden. Yeah.
Brian McFadden, that's right. And they had been speaking about it. What are you hearing? And if not Patrick Peterson, are the Patriots looking to make some sort of defensive move before the trade deadline next week?
They don't have the room to make a move on someone like Patrick Peterson. Right now, they're even with the restructures, they're about somewhere between $5 and $7 million under the salary cap. That's not enough to bring someone like Patrick Peterson in. Could you do it? Yes. Their issues cap-wise, like, and I know this is kind of getting into the weeds, but they've got five players right now that are taking up $65 million on their salary cap. That's about 37% of their cap, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if those five guys are on the team under their current contracts next year, then those guys are going to be making $77 million on the cap, which is going to be 41% of their cap next year. So they've sort of, like, I think if they're going to do something now, it'll probably be more of a move to augment the roster. I don't think it's going to be a big splash move. Gordon was kind of a way of getting around it, mm-hmm. where you don't have to pay big money for somebody who's going to be an impact player. And I think if there is someone who is a big name, look at guys who are still on their rookie contracts. And I know I've brought these names up before, but guys that are on these teams that may have fallen out of favor. You know, it's a good example of it's like what the Saints just did with Eli Apple. Now, he's a first-round pick, but he's still on an affordable deal for a corner.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd fallen out of favor. The guy who drafted him's gone in New York. In Arizona, you know, they're blowing things up. So I know everybody wants to look at Larry Fitzgerald and Patrick Peterson. I think there are some former first-round picks there, and guys like Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick, who you could ask about, who are... You know, they're not making nothing, but they're on much more affordable.
Would they trade Larry Fitzgerald? I mean, he's such an integral...
Only if he asked.
Okay, yeah.
There's no way. I mean, I think with both Peterson and Fitzgerald, it would have to be almost like to make it relatable here, it would have to be like a Ray Bourque situation. You know, where it would be like, because that's what those guys are. Like, so with either of those guys, it would have to be probably those guys going to the team and saying, you know, like, I've done everything I can here. Like, I want to go compete for a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in the Peterson situation, even that might not be enough, because that's not a market where interest in the team is automatic. And if they are going to go through a 2 or 3 year rebuild, like, the idea from a business standpoint of getting rid of stars might not be workable.
Are the Patriots making calls? And
they're always making calls, yes.
Okay, I mean, that you know of, specific calls. Do you know that, are there any other GMs that are telling you that they're receiving some calls from the Patriots?
I mean, yeah, they call everyone. And, I mean, like, this time of year, and I know this kind of, you know, I mean, look, I can give you a good example. Like, the Jets called on Chandler Jones. You know what I mean? Like, that happened a couple weeks ago. You know, and so... Like, these calls happen all the time. How many of them are realistic? I think as much as anything else over the last 2 weeks, the calls you're getting is who's available here, who's available there. And look, I mean, I think it's, you can look at the obvious situations. And, you know, with the Giants, it's players at this point like Alec Ogletree and Janoris Jenkins go to Denver. You know, Denver's interesting because if they win on Sunday, it could affect things. If they get blown off the field by the Chiefs, Demaryius Thomas, Brandon Marshall,
yeah,
Chris Harris, yep. Bradley Roby. Like, there could be a lot of players available there. And so I think if you're looking, if you want to look at where the Patriots would be looking and be in the back seven of the defense, that's the sense I've gotten from other teams is that's where New England would be looking.
All right, is this defense good enough to win it all? I mean, when you see the way that they've played, and like, we, you know, we've seen slow starts from Patriots defenses, but by this point of the season, they've usually kind of figured things out.
See, I think the last couple of years, though, has been a talent issue. And like last year, it was a talent issue. And we thought it was fixed, and then it got them in the end. And so would you say last year's defense wasn't good enough? Well, in the end, it wasn't. In the end, all the issues that we saw in September and October, when they faced an opponent who was able to, you know, take advantage of those flaws, like, then all of a sudden, you know, now you're in a position where it's like, yeah, like, the talent wasn't good enough. And I think that's where they don't have difference makers on defense, except for maybe, I mean, I would say Gilmore is probably in that category now. But outside of Stephon Gilmore, they don't really have difference makers on defense. And so I think they've got to sort of win the same way they won last year, which means, you know, a lot of it's on Brady in the passing game.
Now, who could slow him down? Who could slow that offense down in the AFC?
In the AFC, well, we've seen what it looks like against the Chiefs. Those two teams playing the playoffs, you're probably talking about a shootout. The Ravens, if you go back and you watch how the Ravens played the Saints last week, the Saints offense, like, now that they've got, like, everyone, now they've got the full group, now that Ingram's back in the mix, they can use Kamara the way that they want to. Michael Thomas looks like one of the two or three best receivers in the league. The Ravens were able to keep the Saints in check for three quarters. The Ravens going into that game were first or second in every defensive category. And the Ravens, I think, are the first team, and this is sort of an interesting part of it. The Ravens are the first team that I think has started to try to innovate on defense the way that other teams are innovating on offense. What I mean by that is you see a lot of NFL teams have become more open-minded over the last 5 or 6 years. And I think part of this is Chip Kelly coming into the league and what we saw with Robert Griffin and Colin Kaepernick and all those guys 5 or 6 years ago. Like, teams are way more open to dipping into the college game to take ideas off on offense. I think what you're seeing with the Ravens now, the Ravens have spent the last couple of years trying to look for a counterpunch to that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they've done is they've empowered their players. And so Eric Weddle on the back end and C.J. Mosley on the front end, what Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, and John Harbaugh have done, they put a ton of responsibility on those guys and said, whatever you guys see, we're giving you the power to adjust. And it's worked. And they've got talent on that side of the ball. They spent a lot of draft capital the last 3 years there. And so under the radar, I think the Ravens defensively, like, the Ravens have a defense to win a championship. The question is whether or not, you know, Joe Flacco's been pretty good this year.
Yeah.
Like, and they don't need to be great offensively. We saw last week, they don't need to be great offensively to win. Justin Tucker makes that kick. They're going into overtime, and, you know, maybe they beat the Saints. I think that the Ravens are the team out there that you look at that if I'm the Chiefs or I'm the Patriots, if I'm one of these offense-heavy teams, like, I look at the Ravens, I say that's the one team where I'd be a little nervous going against their defense.
All right. Burt Breer in studio, if you have a question, 617-779-0985. We'll be right back here with the headlines.
Toucher and Rich.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Be listening at 7:50 this morning for your chance to score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom. StopandShop.com. It's going to be around 7:50.
You were talking about teams that could stop the Patriots.
Yep.
Should we start taking the Texans seriously?
No, because I think they're too flawed. I still think the offensive line issue is there.
Mm-hmm. Big loss too last night.
And losing Will Fuller is a huge loss. Yeah. And he's started to really look like a weapon.
Correct. he's having a great game too.
And I think Watson's coming on. I mean, like, Watson, like, the last couple weeks, we're starting to see him, like, he's starting, like the ribs, like he's starting to get healthier there. And the lung, and then, like, the ACL, they say, you know, it just takes some time to relearn your knee. And, like, he looked dynamic last night, I thought. Their issue is there are two position groups that are just completely out of sorts, and I don't think can be fixed till the offseason. That's the offensive line,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, is liable to get Watson killed, you know, before Christmas. And then the corner position. And those are two things that are really hard to hide. Like, if you're not very good at corner, you're not very good at on the offensive line.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are two spots that are pretty hard to hide.
Well, what's wild is that, you know, as much of a DB we can say that this guy is, J.J. Watt has all of a sudden...
He looks great.
He looks great. And he didn't really as much at the beginning of the season, but no. All of the team, what are they, ripped off five wins in a row now?
Their front seven is like J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Merciless.
Oh, man.
I mean, if Cunningham looks like he's going to be a good young player if he can get healthy again, D.J. Reader, Benardrick McKinney, like it's a shame that I mentioned the two issues they have, offensive line and corner. There are really two things that play into that. One, they paid the wrong guys. Like, A.J. Boye was, like, a number one corner, and their problem was they'd already paid Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson, and they drafted Kevin Johnson. And so, like, they didn't have room left to pay A.J. Boye, who was their best corner.
Yeah.
And then the Dwayne Brown situation last year, which, I mean, you guys know this. They basically traded him because of the anthem thing.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that was... traded him.
I don't even know who that is.
Okay, Dwayne Brown was their left tackle. He was their left tackle for about 10 years.
Okay.
And... So you guys remember what Bob McNair said last...
The inmates running the asylum?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the inmates running the asylum thing in October. Well, Dwayne Brown basically said in the locker room after a game something along the lines of, I don't know if I can play for this guy anymore. And was part of, like, this whole... the internal resistance against what the owner had done. And so, like, they were... sort of in a corner where it was like the football people were in a corner where it was like, what do we do? You know what I mean? They almost had to get rid of it. They almost had to trade him. Like, they didn't have a choice. And that's not on Dwayne Brown. That's on the owner. On the owner, because, you know, you put your football people in a position where, I mean, one of the toughest positions to fill, left tackle. You'd had that filled for 10 years, and now you got to trade him on the fly.
So you've got that team going in one direction. And then the other side of things, you've got the Jaguars, who at the beginning of the season...
Just keep an eye on them. Like, this is... You guys remember when Jalen Ramsey got suspended?
Yeah.
In the summer?
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't just about, like, that one incident where he, you know, tweeted at the reporter. It wasn't just about that. That was about Doug Marrone seeing something in his team and seeing something brewing under the surface and trying to send a warning shot to his locker room.
Wow.
Knock it off. Like, and... You guys know, like, last year, that was an underdog that came out of nowhere, and you had lots of players on that team that were young and rising, and maybe the general public outside of Jacksonville hadn't really heard of a lot of these guys. And what happens? Well, they get to the AFC Championship game, then they go into the offseason, and now all of a sudden, like, all these guys are bigger names than they ever had been. And what did we see all offseason? We saw a lot of squawking, we saw a lot of... And I think that there was concern in that internally. There was concern... This is sort of turning into Seattle. Like, this is a little bit like a Seattle situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Carroll's greatest value, like, one of his great, like, I would argue the greatest value Pete Carroll has is his ability to manage personalities, because he was able to keep that thing together for, like, and that thing was volatile. He was able to keep that thing together for like 5 or 6 years before it blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way the Jaguars were constructed, because they had Gus Bradley there, who came from Seattle, and they did a lot of the same sorts of things as far as bringing in big personalities and just prioritizing talent over everything else.
Yeah.
And Doug Marrone's from a different school now. And, like, so you see, like, I think Doug saw it in August. Like, he saw it. Like, this is brewing. And if we rip off a bunch of wins to start the season, we'll be okay. But what happens when we hit that pothole? Well, now they've hit that pothole. And did you guys see what happened after the game on Sunday?
Oh, yeah.
The locker room opens.
The yelling.
And,
They're grabbing, they're holding each other back. They're yelling at coaches.
And it's not just, look, Jalen Ramsey's I can't be more clear about this. Jalen Ramsey is a problem, like, right now for them. Great player. He is a problem because, like, there's, like, it's just, it's, you are who your best players are. And Jalen Ramsey has been, like, just the way he's been so out there over the course of the last 6 or 7 months, the way he's carried himself, the chippy way he plays, like, there's a lot there. And it's not just him. It's Yannick Ngakoue. It's Dante Fowler. There's a lot of big egos, a lot of big personalities.
Who was the guy
that thing's a powder keg where if they get blown out on Sunday, I wouldn't be surprised if he, I think, take a really bad turn.
Who was the Jaguars player who just said, I watched a tape of our team, and there's no reason that Colin Kaepernick shouldn't be playing in this league? He basically crapped on Blake Bortles while praising Colin Kaepernick at the same time.
That was Malcolm Jenkins that said that.
Oh, it was Malcolm Jenkins. Yeah. Okay.
That's Philadelphia. Okay. That's something else entirely.
That's Malcolm Jenkins.
That's right, in Philadelphia. That's right. But what about the quarterback position?
But there was someone who said, I think it was Ramsey, wasn't it? Like somebody said this week, you guys see what we see. It was something along those lines.
I wouldn't doubt that it was him. But when you talk, I mean, there's rumors about Derek Carr possibly going to the Jaguars. Do you think they're just going to ride out?
I think they're going to ride it out. And I think, I think it could be, I think this is one of the things that, one of the things that Bill is best at here. Bill doesn't like ride with his mistakes. You know, Bill will not ride his mistakes into a ditch. And that's one of the things I think all of us can respect most about him is that, if he makes a mistake on a draft pick or he, and look, I mean, there are little examples of hanging on to guys for too long, like Jordan Richards, but that's a low end, who cares type of thing. The guy's in the kickoff team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think part of this with the Jaguars is they're riding the Blake Bortles mistake. And it's funny. I remember when he was coming out, I had someone say to me, a guy I really respect, a quarterback's coach I really respect, said to me, it's you see everything you need to see with Blake Bortles on tape. This is when he was at UCF, right? You see everything you need to see on tape with him. It just takes a lot of tape to get there.
Yeah. Nothing jumps out of you as being special.
Well, no, but it's but the point was you could put together a highlight tape and you would see everything you need to see with Blake Bortles, but you need to watch 10 games to get it to put that tape together, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's who he. But hasn't that been who he's been as a pro?
Yes.
We've seen flashes where he looks really
good.
The first
couple games of the season, he looked like he was
the best game of his life against the Patriots, and then he hasn't been close since.
And after 5 years. It's probably
you are who you are,
right? If this is happening in year one or year two, I would totally advocate for be patient, give the kid time. Mm-hmm. After 5 years, it's just you get to the point where it's you are who you are, are who you are, and you have to and to me, I think a big part of it for the Jaguars is when Fournette went down, they sort of lost their identity offensively, which is why they had to trade for Carlos Hyde. That was a huge part of it. We need another hammer back there. Yeldon's a good player. Grant was a good player before he got hurt. But when they lost Fournette for more than a game or two, now they've lost him for an extended period of time, they sort of lost their identity. And that means having to hang your hat on Blake Bortles more often, which has been a problem.
All right. Did Derek Carr cry?
Derek Carr
is getting a lot of problems.
Derek Carr played with broken bones in his back last year.
Yeah, but did he cry?
I can neither confirm nor deny whether or not he cried.
Okay. Now, if he did cry,
but the players think he cried.
No, but if he did cry, how big a deal is that in a locker room?
I don't think that Derek Carr's biggest problem right now is whether or not he's got the locker room. I think he's okay there. I think the bigger problem is whether or not he's got the head coach. And part of it with him is that he was sort of seen as this spread quarterback. And the Raiders did things to accommodate him his first 3 years in the league. And we've seen a lot more of this in the NFL in general, kind of coaches meeting players halfway, doing some things, incorporating different things to make players comfortable because you may have done A, B, or C in college. And so we're going to do these things to accommodate you. The Raiders did those things for Derek Carr. Gruden's been a little tougher about that. I have a system. This is what it is. We're going to run our system. And so I think that there's been some back and forth there. I personally don't think I'd be pretty surprised if Gruden trades Carr before Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's got 2 months to prove that he's still the guy that Gruden can build around because they're going to have high draft picks too.
That's sure. I was reading about this yesterday, but imagine if Mahomes was drafted by Gruden, he would be out of the league. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Car number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group. Contents line 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom, stopandshop.com.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, 85 Sports Hub.
985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We were talking about Schilling yesterday, and Schilling gets pissed off at a lot of people.
Well, we were talking about Kershaw. Yeah. And so you had Rick Honeycutt, who is the pitching coach for the Dodgers, just randomly after game one started complaining about the bullpen at Fenway Park and how it's ridiculous because the fans are hanging over the side and that there's no, they're getting in the personal space of the pitchers and that Kershaw didn't deserve that. On top of that, Kershaw was being heckled. First of all, by the way, I ended up getting an email from the person who does those dugout video or the bullpen videos and has like tons of them. And he was like, hey, I appreciate the this. And sure, there are some people who do find this. What was it called? ASMR. ASMR, where that makes their hair
did
tingle.
Did everyone go and look at ASMR videos yesterday?
No, but my wife, who I told you was... That's nice. My wife was saying, kick it, Slash, was saying that the paper that she was reading that a student wrote in her class concerned videos of people slurping up noodles. Oh. And that's an ASD. And she goes, I can't watch that. She goes, I clicked on one, and it was the most disgusting thing ever.
Yeah.
And I couldn't watch it.
They have ones that I don't like crinkling of paper.
Yeah, sound comfortable.
Well, for some people, it hits the trigger.
So Rick Honeycutt was complaining that these fans were yelling at Clayton Kershaw. And to that, I was like, all right, well, it's the World Series. Fans are going to yell things, and as long as they're not overtly racist, I think almost anything's fair game, pretty much,
right,
if you yell at a fan. But what is always stupendous is when you actually get under the skin of an athlete and they turn around and they yell back at you and they get pissed. And we were talking about instances where this has happened where, and I'm not talking about throwing things at someone, but you mentioned something off the air, Bert, about what was this? These Texans fans did what?
Okay, so this is like 2013. And you guys remember, like, Matt Schaub had some really good years in Houston. And then towards the end,
it was
like he got hurt, and T.J. Yates came in, and Case Keenum came in, and then he came back, and he wasn't the same, and like there was like a slew of pick sixes, and so there was some fans that got a little fed up and decided to show up at Matt Schaub's house and discuss their issues with
him. What? God. So he like answered the door and like there's guys.
So I just pulled up a news story, which is always great because like, you read the straight news story about these whack jobs, right?
Yeah.
Like, very serious terms. A source close to law enforcement told the Fred and Ted show late Tuesday evening that Houston police were contacted by the NFL after fans approached Houston Texan quarterback Matt Schaub at his home and berated him for his recent poor play. No arrests were made. A fan went to his house and told him off, said the source, adding that the person, quote, took pictures of his family, which were allegedly posted on Facebook. Fortunately, neither Schaub nor anyone in his family were hurt. The irate fans left on their own accord before police could respond, and it's believed Schaub and the Texans contacted NFL security, which asked for assistance from the Houston Police Department after the incident.
Okay, well, that's obviously...
Say what you will, buy a gun. Someone comes up to you and starts yelling at you, taking pictures of your family, you just hold, and you're in your house. Hello!
How would you feel if, like, you know, a listener rolled up to the Toucher residence in Newton to lodge some complaints with the show, Fred?
Well, I've had the news come to my house to talk about my incredible Tim Tebow controversy. I would defend myself.
Well, that's obviously taking it over the top. But, I mean, have you ever pissed off an athlete just by something you yelled at them?
Yes. 617-779-0985.
How did they react? And, by the way, you reminded me of a story off the air that when we get back, right after the headlines, we have to get to.
All right.
Well, there was the one last year we talked about, too. The Seahawks-Jaguars game got a little out of hand.
Oh, yeah, of course. You don't want to talk about pissing off an athlete.
All right. 617-779-0985. No commercials here. Just the headlines.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, the Sports Hub, the home of the New England Patriots. 98.5, the Sports Hub. WBZFM and HD, Boston, Beasley.